Welcome to Farming Aotearoa with Peter Burke. Kia ora and welcome once again to Farming Aotearoa, where agricultural journalist Peter Burke brings us up to date with the latest news from the primary sector. I'm Catherine Scullin, and Peter is here with me in the studio at Coast Access Radio here on the Kapiti Coast. Hello there.
G'day, how are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thanks. I must say also hello to all of our listeners in the Horowhenua, because we go up all the way up to, well, probably I think north of Foxton somewhere.
Yeah, it's a great area, the Horowhenua. It's a beautiful place. I came up from Wellington. I'm a refugee from that part of the world, and thank God I am. I hate to be caught up in that cycleway stuff down in Island Bay, which is going to be a monument to incompetence, but that's all right.
Well, it's pretty hard to think about money going into those sorts of things when you rightly mentioned before we went on air that there are roads that are further north that are atrocious, and that it has a flow-on effect all over the place. Do you want to briefly talk about that? Let's get off your chest.
We'll change the program, shall we? So let's talk about a road trip. So I've just been spent 2 weeks on the road, literally going up to places a little bit out of the way, like Mangakino, which is sort of out of Taupo, sort of, and then up to Opotiki and down the coast around Te Rāwhiti. And what I can say about that is that the road that breaks my heart is the road from the Moirua down to Napier. Now, I went there about 6 months ago, and there were 9 sets of traffic lights there, and there was, on that road, it took 3 hours to get from Moirua to Napier. Nothing has changed. There are still 9 sets of traffic lights. It still took 3 hours. And I was talking to the local mayor today, and he said to me something like, I think there are more traffic management people on this road than there are workers. I'm inclined to agree with that, because at the weekend when I drove through it, there were lots of traffic managers there, but not many people doing work on it. It's a bit like that line about, how can you tell the council workers from the crows? The crows are the ones that are moving. But anyway, we won't go down to that line. Anyway, however, but what worries me is that is just, it might sound glib, but if you look at it, the people of Wairoa, to get to a hospital, which is Napier, which is their hospital, their regional hospital, it's a three-hour journey through 9 sets of traffic lights. If you want to get your meat from the AFCO freezing works in Wairoa down to the ships at Napier, it's a three-hour drive along, at least. If you want to get your horticultural products from there to there, it's that. If you want to bring in petrol fuel to there, if you want to bring in food for supermarkets, that's what it is. And I can't understand for the life of me how long it takes these bureaucrats in Wellington to get off their quite frankly, and do something about it. I mean, to me, there seems to be a lot of meetings and muffins and all that sort of stuff. And I've been through local governments, so I know, and central government, and I know that there are more muffins consumed in the public service than there are in any other part of the country, because they have meetings and they have another meeting to have a meeting about the meeting. And after about a year, they might do something which won't be what they plan to do anyway. It's yes, minister all the way.
Yeah.
But this is the case of classic case of incompetence, in my view, of everyone involved in that sort of roading thing. Okay, it's a hard job. No one denies that. But can't we stop building cycleways and start building roads? Is that impossible? I mean, the people in Wairoa can't cycle all the way down to Napier to get to the doctor, can they?
Yeah.
And whereas we have that indulgent attitude around some of our cities, which I rail at terribly. I'm sorry, I'm not against cycles per se. I'm against the infrastructure that they're putting in for it. Looking at that road, you go along, there's a Bailey Bridge there across the Waiweka Gorge. It's only one way, only can take a certain weight of stock truck, okay? So you can get one truck at a time across it. That's it. It's one way. So there's traffic lights there. There's another washout not too far down the road, which if you look back on, you can still see the road underneath it. It's propped up by bits of timber and all sorts of stuff. It is, I think fragile is the word that you'd use.
Okay. Around.
Now, if you go inland, there are still some farmers who still haven't got road access to their farms yet.
So this is after the cyclone?
This is the year after the cyclone. There's still people that can't get road access, proper road access into their places. The farmers up there still can't put fences up to subdivide their property. I talked to one farmer who said, I've managed now to secure my boundary.
Wow.
But he said, I cannot secure the rest of it because the land is still moving. And And what he said I've been doing, and I went to two farms that, that showed me this, that they're bringing in what we call waratahs, which are sort of temporary fencing things.
Yeah.
And he said, if I don't use those, I'll put in a fence tomorrow. Overnight, there might be 10 mils of rain. And that same fence could be undermined, and my stock will be out tomorrow. That I could have, they can't farm properly. And they're telling me now that they will take 5 years to do that. It's not so much a case of have they got the labour, have they got the money, but the land is still in that state of movement.
And we're coming into winter.
Now, what they will say to you is that if we get a 20 mil lot of rain, which doesn't sound a lot and it isn't, that could still be a disaster for them because the water tables are so high.
Yeah, right.
If you're on the lowland areas, and I was at one horticultural block, and they were saying to me they're in the same position, that they can't get machinery on their properties because of the high water table. It's any bit of rain, it's a disaster.
Yeah. Not,
and there's nothing you can do about the rain, to be fair. Some of these things, you can't, farmers have to accept that there will always be problems. This land was never destined to be farmland really anyway. It was goes back to an era of Muldoon where they stripped the land of all its natural fauna to put grass on it. And you put grass on soil that's very tenuous, it's got papa underneath it, it just slides, and it continues to slide. And interesting enough, what's happening at some of the slips is that while they put grass on, the grass is actually taken off quite well, you know. But then there's other properties which still have got silt on them, some of a metre deep. They've still got logs on their thing. I've got a picture in my cell phone here of an irrigator almost up to the nozzles in silt still.
What?
So what I think is happening is, I would call it the forgotten cyclone. Because in Wellington, the bureaucrats seldom get out of beyond Johnsonville, quite frankly. And that's not a reflection of Johnsonville, it's simply it's atop of the Naranga Gorge, to see these situations and what can be done. And I, as a journalist, and for a small paper, it only goes to farmers, doesn't get the message out there to the average Joe, because I don't think people realise how others are living at the moment.
Yeah.
If you look, we went at the Esk Valley. There were still, in places, 2 metres of silt around apple trees. There were apple trees sort of popping up beyond the 2 metres of silt.
They're coming through the silt?
They're coming through the silt for some reason. I've got a picture of one of them where you can see the top of the post. And they're still, the poor old apple trees. There's others that you look at and you know they're dying. They're not, they've survived the floods, supposedly, but we don't know, and no one knows yet, how long or what will be the prognosis for some of those orchards in the future. They might produce a crop this year. There's no guarantee they will do it next year.
Yeah.
There is unknowns here. There's no science about that. So we're looking at a situation in the country and in that part of the world, particularly the right down the east coast and right through Tauwharawhiti to Hawke's Bay, which is in a state that I don't think this country actually recognises at all. And I am, as a journalist and as a writer of farmers, feel very frustrated by what is being done and what I can do, because I can't do much. I'm preaching to the converted. You know, there's a few people on this listening to this will think you're right, and others will think I'm a so-and-so for, you know, attacking cyclists. But I'm sorry, I think getting to hospital is more important than doing a bit of recreational riding around a road.
Well, they'll soon complain if they can't get their fruit.
Well, they will, because that's the problem. And, you know, if you look at so much of your salads come out of Gisborne, Leader Brand's big provider of those, they've got to take those down that road every day to get down to the North Island. The only other way is through the Kaiwaika Gorge up to Opotiki and Whakatane and all that area, which incidentally also had a pretty bad hit of flooding last year too, which I'll talk about later on. So that's my rant for the day. It's about the failure in this country at the moment, in my mind, to actually prioritise and say, let's put a whole lot of effort into getting that road in particular, because that affects the lives of an area that's vital to the economy of the country, produces sheep, beef, horticultural products.
Who's the MP up there or in those
regions? There's a new one now, I think. And there's I think the one for that area is a new one. I think it's Katie Nimmin, memory, who was elected. She's a national MP. Wairoa comes under Hawke's Bay, I think.
Okay.
And Tairawhiti is another, a member for East Coast. They're both Nats, I think, now. Different MPs. I'm not saying the previous ones were bad. I'm simply saying I wonder whether the bureaucrats really have got off their asses and done some work instead of just chewing muffins all day. Sorry.
Right, well.
Anyway.
Put your muffin down, get something done.
Okay, so I've got something better to talk about now.
Right, yes, I want you to talk about the awards.
Yeah, the amount. So the trophy. So this seems to be the season for awards. You can get an award for just about everything you do these days. even sitting down here and doing nothing will probably get you an award for being idle and disorderly. But the Ahuwhenua Award is a very prestigious award, set up in 1932 by the very well-renowned and much-respected Māori leader Te Aparana Ngata, and the Governor General at the time, Lord Bledisloe, who was a very interesting and a very benevolent character. He was a farmer. He was the Governor General of New Zealand, and he donated umpteen Bledisloe cups. But there's three of those go in the Ahuwhenua collection. So in the last few weeks, the two finalists in this year's competition to determine the top Māori Dairy Farmer of the Year have been held field day. So it's a chance that these people have got to the stage where they've been selected on the first by the judges to be a finalist. And now their chance was to go out and show everyone who wanted to come along and see their operation. So I went to two farms, one is called Wairarapa Moana. And you wonder why Wairarapa Moana is doing in Mangakino. The simple answer is because they got kicked off their land by the King Charles's mates, you know, years, centuries ago. The Crown dispossessed them of their land and they gave them this other rather poor land up in the central North Island. I get a bit amused sometimes when farmers say how wonderful we're doing down in the Wairarapa. Well, you're living on stolen property, to put it crudely. That's the Maori view of it, and that's what they would say.
Yeah.
And I think they grieve. They cry for their land because they were dispossessed. And I think they've got a point.
Yeah.
Wairarapa Wana are a very, very successful operation. They have 12,000 cows on their property up there. It's a big operation. They produce something like 5 million kilograms of milk solids. That's big. And they are the main supplier to a Māori dairy factory, of which they are a cornerstone founder. Around Taupo. So they're a very big operation, but they've entered only one of their 12 farms called Farm 4, 4 of 12. And it was a really interesting insight because you're up quite high there. You know, you're up at the back of Taupo in that central area. It's where the Aotearoa Dam is, all that sort of area. It's quite high. You can almost feel the altitude up there. It was a bit cold on the day, but the farm was beautiful. And what was impressive is that what they're looking at doing, and I think one of the reasons they've entered it is, I'd almost call it pristine in a way. And the pasture was really beautiful, really good sward of grass, clover, ryegrass, the whole thing. But what they've done is to try and make that farm more profitable, more productive, and at the same time reduce the amount of fertiliser or nitrogen. And they've got their own team, which is very, very good, but they've also employed some other good advisors. And one of those people happens to be Dr. Gavin Sheath, who is a long-time scientist who'd worked for AgResearch. And he's come on, and we were talking about it and saying, well, what do you do? He said, well, we looked at the farm and tried to think what we want to do is we want to get profitability, we want sustainability. How can we achieve that? And what a lot of farms do, dairy farms, and it's a good thing, nothing, not knocking it, is they have what they call winter crop. In other words, they grow crops and the cows eat those in winter, instead of putting out silage or whatever that might be. But he said what we found was that the amount of nitrogen we were putting on to get those crops was high. And in fact, we said we've cut them out because we can reduce the nitrogen and we can still grow grass and we can use other supplements which require less nitrogen. So therefore, we can reduce that. And they've halved their nitrogen losses, the amount of nitrogen in the last few years by a series of well-based science decisions. And that, I think, is pretty impressive.
It is.
And they haven't dropped a cent, you know, a kilogram of milk solids as well. So they've got, on that farm, they've got nearly 1,000 cows, 416 kilograms of milk solids. That's very good production. It's a very, very efficient farm. So that was an interesting field day. We had nearly 300, over 350 people at that day. They came from all around. The other finalists came down. We had the finalists of the Young Māori Farmer of the Year also there, the three young finalists there. And a lot of people from sponsors, farm consultants, other farmers, looking to have a look at this farm particularly because it is very, very good. And I wouldn't proclaim to be an expert in farming. I'm not. I'm just a journalist. And I accept the limit of my knowledge. It's to ask questions, not to give you, you know, but for a casual observer and talking to others, it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good deal. So that was interesting to go up there and see that. I've been up there once before, haven't really spent the time on farm, but they've all got modern dairy sheds. They're not over endowed with technology, but they've got enough there to make it work. So that was one. So that was a good trip. That was just before Easter. So I did about 1,200 Ks on that trip, so that wasn't bad.
That's pretty good.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Then did the same amount of Ks, came home for 2 days and headed off to a Portiki and to another farm, the Whakatauria Māori Trust Board's dairy farm, which is quite a different one to Wairarapa Moana. They're just a single farm. They've got that farm together by the history is rather sad. I think you can still feel the grieving of it. Their land was taken from them over a whole lot of issues, and there's still a lot of bitterness, I think, around that side of it. It hasn't gone away, and that's, you know, nearly 200 years ago, and they're still grieving, they're still bitter, but they're doing their best. They've got some what they call corpus land, their own land. They've bought another farm adjacent to it, and they've leased some land. So they've got a milking platform, as we call it, warm. The farm itself is just over 200 hectares, and they've got about 800 cows, 750 cows on them. They're doing quite well, but normally they would produce around 3,000 kgs of milk solids. For those farmers listening to the program, you'll know what I mean by this, okay? Others, you'll think, what the hell am I talking about? But that's another issue. What interesting about it is that a year ago, and I was up there again about a year ago in that same area, just around that farm, but looking at a horticultural block, there'd been terrible flooding there. And I remember driving along the road not far from where that farm was and seeing a cluster of about 6 cows on a hillock in a paddock. The paddock was just flooded, and these 6 or 7 cows were up there on the high ground. This farm suffered the same fate, and what you do get, the pasture was flooded badly. That means that it's hard to get feed. What feed is there is not very good. It's very watery, so the cows, there's nothing much nutritious in wet grass, yeah, quite frankly. And as a result of that, the cows didn't really want to eat the stuff. As they said, as the farm advisor said to me, everyone was miserable here. The cows were not happy. We were not happy. And there was nothing we could do about it. So that really dropped them. That knocked them back quite a lot. And they lost 6% of their normal production that year. And it still drifted over to this season because with wet, you can also get other diseases that come along, like mastitis was one of them. They got an outbreak of mastitis. Then they got a problem with their calves as well. They got rotative virus there. So we ended up with a lot of things which still flowed over into this season, and they're now just starting to catch up with it. And it's a hard road for them because it wasn't just one cyclone. It wasn't just hail or whatever it was. They didn't get much from Gabriel. They got a lot of wind, I think, more than that. But it was just this continuous rain. And what we're seeing in that sort of area from Eastern Bay of Plenty round to Tairawhiti and in particular Tairawhiti down to Wairoa, is it isn't just one event, it's a number of events. Mm. It's a succession of rain events which, you know, cumulatively have increased the rainfall in those areas, which has, as we know, the water tables are very high. So if you, again, I'd say to those people, they would say, well, if we get a big shower of rain, then we might even get ponding because, well, we've seen that locally here a couple of years ago. I think I know our golf courses were like that. You'd get the water in the bunkers.
Yeah.
The tables were so high, but the difference for farming is that, of course, it's had the effect on the metabolic state of the animals, and that's been difficult. I thought they were very, very brave in entering the competition in many ways, but if you look at what they're doing and what they have done, they've tried to really up the ante. They've put a new dairy shed in. They've put some new bins in for grain and silage and stuff. And this year they've had an amazing, it's interesting, in that area particularly, while some parts of the country around Horowhenua are in drought, up there they're having the best ever year they've ever had for maize silage. Now normally these people would say that they were down to about 15 tonnes a hectare. This year they're up to 30 tonnes. It's doubled. In fact, it's so much grass growing there. The farm advisor said to me, our problem at the moment is managing grass. And another farmer said to me, well, there's a problem at the moment that even the contractors are being offered free silage, free grass to take, because the farmers simply can't control it with their cows. So it's all quite, for me, looking around at these places, it's quite interesting just to see the dynamics of what's playing out. And while we see numbers in the papers about what's happening here and what's happening there, when you look at the ground and what people are doing, they're doing some pretty amazing things in some very, very difficult circumstances. Yeah. And I have a great admiration for the rural people because I hate the word resilience because it doesn't really tell the story. It means that it's actually hardship they're putting up with. Resilience is another word for people going through hardship.
That's a big difference.
A difference there. And I mean, you look at some people, like in Wairoa, still out in their own homes. There's still dozens of them living in temporary accommodation. Their homes aren't fit yet because there's been, I won't use a word, but you know, something to build up and getting them into permanent housing again. So I think the road trip for me and going to see these farms and seeing what people are doing was really quite, you know, you just come back and think how lucky we are down here or how lucky other New Zealanders are. How lucky New Zealanders are to think that there are people going through hell to make sure they've got food on the table.
Yeah.
And that's something that does, you know, that's something that's really comes through very strongly for me. But so that was the road trip, which I think is quite interesting. And seeing the different, you know, how things can change. Like in a year, maize cropped down by 50% this year. They can't store enough maize. So what do you do? And I took some pictures. And the maize is as high. It's almost as high as a studio. You know,
grief.
It's incredible. And it looks beautiful. It's not just crappy stuff. It's good. Yeah. It's really good quality. Really good quality food, which will be, will be great. So they'll, but one of them pointed out to me, well, we don't know what it's going to deliver us yet, do we, Pete? So you know, if we get a bad winter, we'll certainly get through it well. The cow condition is good, which means that they will probably have a good season next season. So I think at this time of the year, dairy farmers in particular are looking to say, we'll milk as far as we can, but we've got to protect the cows for next season. We've got to get them in a good condition when they calve, and that when they're mated in July, they're also in a good condition, so they will milk well, and we'll get a good mating, and that we'll get good calving. So all that stuff is, you know, it's all happening around this. So that's my road trip around a little part of rural New Zealand, which is quite fascinating, eh?
It's very fascinating. So you don't see it. I mean, with the introduction of supermarkets and kids not knowing where things come from, you kind of forget about all of the struggles that people have to go through and how things are produced. It's not as easy as, okay, here's a number of cows, here's some milk, here's a number of cows, here's X, Y equals Z. No, all these things you have to deal with.
The other thing I just like to talk about briefly is I went to a Leader brand. They're one of the biggest. If you go to a supermarket, you'll find a bag of salad. It'll be Leader brand by and large. They've got a 10-hectare site which is covered in glasshouse. It's a glasshouse, 10 hectares.
A 10-hectare glasshouse.
That's massive. You can, you know. Wow. And the reason they're doing that is that they think that that with the weather, with the climate, they can get, and with their salad, they're mainly producing salad varieties like rocket and spinach and all sorts of things. With that, they can probably get three cuts. They can get more cropping because they're not affected so badly by the weather. They've also got it irrigated. They've got their own lake, as it were, to irrigate that thing.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's fascinating about it is that they harvest it. You think they just pick a lettuce. No, they don't. They drive this machine over the lettuce and cut the top off it. They take the leaves off it. It's electric. It's not diesel. And it just comes up a conveyor belt into the boxes. It's taken away into their factory in Gisborne and then on the truck down here. It's done electrically. Done with this electric equipment, which is, I think, Italian, actually, from memory. And this is just so, it's so brilliantly done. These guys are really, you know, Leader brand is a very good name for these people. They're great leaders in what they're doing. And just to go and see this place, which is, you know, it's bigger than that. Well, it's twice the size of the Wellington Stadium, probably.
That's mad.
You know, it's massive. It just seems like, where is the end of this place? I don't know. I lost myself in it.
No wonder they need electric equipment to
get
around.
Yeah, but it's beautiful, and they do.
It's better than diesel.
It is. So there's no smells in there, and it's also quiet. If you think of a workplace, here is this big, massive, great glass house, and then there's no noise there. It's like being in a church.
Oh, the air must be beautiful too.
It's lovely. It's quite fresh. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Oh, how lovely.
So, do you want to talk about one more thing? We've got time.
One more thing. One more story.
Just want to give you one more thing, which I think is something that's worth really picking up on. The other night, I was privileged to be invited by the Ministry for Primary Industry to their annual Biosecurity Awards. You wonder what that's all about, and you think biosecurity is about the border, which we all know about.
Yeah.
But it's also recognising some of the efforts that different individuals and groups and schools do towards protecting the flora and fauna of New Zealand, as well as the high-level research that goes into dealing with all the dreadful diseases we get in and dealing with things like Mycoplasma bovis. So these awards were held at Parliament. Andrew Hoggard, a local, sort of up in the Manawatu was what Bill McLaren, the great rugby commentator from Scotland, used to call it.
Oh, really?
The Manawatu. And that was his name. I always remember that.
That's a gorgeous story.
And that was a great night to see different groups, iwi, small schools, little school. I was sitting in a table with three lovely women from a school in Hamilton that were doing a project in the middle of Hamilton to get their young kids who really don't see much of the countryside to understand about, you know, looking after, getting rid of weeds and all that sort of thing. And these people were rewarded and they got a chance to go to the beehive and sit in the banquet hall there and all the trappings of Parliament. And I think that's a rather lovely idea. I thought the Ministry for Primary Industry did a great job in organising that. And there was some, you know, some scientists there who did a great job. But it was about community. It was like the idea, I guess, and what the Director General of Agriculture told me was, we want to mobilise New Zealanders to think about biosecurity, because again, if we got some nasties into this country, our economy could be wiped out overnight, literally. Like foot and mouth disease would be one. There's other nasties that could affect horticulture. So that was the positive side for the week, and a really lovely evening, a nice celebratory evening, and a lot of very happy people being together and seeing what others were doing alongside them, and I think a very good positive ending to the week for me anyway.
Perfect, and I think that's a nice ending for the show. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be here.
See you next time.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.